Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 side forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain you're gonna fall.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues. Andy and George, hello to you both.
Good day.
Hi, Paul.
Hi. It's been a couple of weeks since we last spoke, and well, look down the list of things to talk about, and it's fairly extensive. But look, let's start with the football as we always do. A very, very disappointing day yesterday, I think.
Yeah.
On every level.
Yes, it was. I mean, to say, I don't like saying it, but we went out of the cup with a whimper, really. No, absolutely no disrespect to Luton Town, but there should be no way that Luton Town could come to Goodison two times in a season and walk away with two victories. It's just, I think, like I said, with absolutely no disrespect to Luton Town and their supporters and everybody connected with that club. But I'm afraid that two losses at home to them, coupled with the other losses we've suffered at home, just is an indication of how far Everton Football Club has sunk. We're now beginning to trawl depths that I don't think any Evertonian ever thought this club could trawl. And I think, I've got to be honest, watching the game yesterday, I honestly wasn't surprised. And as somebody texted me after the game and said, the best midfielder on the pitch, the best Everton midfielder on the pitch yesterday was Ross Barkley.
No question.
I think that's probably right. You know, and I think really everything that's beset the club in recent years is now beginning. Well, it's not beginning. It is all mounting up to haunt us. We've been so badly run, so badly owned, so badly managed, both on and off the field at times. And I find myself, and I really don't like doing this, but I do find myself looking across the park and thinking that for everything that we have a pop at Liverpool for, they have a plan. They have a plan about what they want to do. I mean, there's no way in the memory of man that Klopp's retirement from Liverpool was a bombshell on Friday morning. It was for the fans, but I suspect they've known within the club, and so they've managed that PR. I mean, they've been front and centre of every paper and every sports programme from the moment that announcement was made on Friday morning. It's constant. They've managed it superbly. You've got to give them credit. They completely, ahead of Maidstone winning at Ipswich, there was only one story in all the sports pages. But they've got a plan. And you just know that by the end of the season, I'll be amazed if Xabi Alonso is not unveiled as the new manager. They won't go anywhere near Steven Gerrard, but they will, you know, they'll have looked at what Alonso's been doing in Germany, etc., and they'll think, there's the guy. He plays the kind of football that we want to play. He plays the kind of football that their fans want to see. And they'll make all the approaches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and they'll get it done. And it'll be seamless, and they'll just continue in the way that they have done for years, and they'll just carry on going forward. They don't look back, they don't look over the shoulder. They've got a plan. We haven't had that plan of any form, to my mind, since the Moyes era. And that was because Moyes ran everything. Everything went through David Moyes, and then obviously he discussed it with the chairman and what have you. But David Moyes ran Everton Football Club back in the day. And since then, we've been a complete disaster. We were a disaster bar that first season under Martinez. Season two was poor. Season three was absolutely dreadful. He went, and then the Moshiri era began with Koeman and what have you. And I found myself thinking last night, in respect of the game yesterday, that many Blues have probably been wanting to see us try Beto and DCL together. But that came about because Decore wasn't able to play, because Decore was injured again. So we had no number 10. We had no number 10 on the squad eligible for selection yesterday. Cast your mind back 5, 6 years ago, we had every number 10 the world could think of, and none of them were any frigging good in that role. And now we haven't got one. Well, we've got one, but he's injured. Where's the plan? There's no building. There's no... The club is just a disaster from top to bottom. You know, the players gave their best effort yesterday and it was nowhere near good enough. Literally, the only one, maybe two, who came out of that game with any credit were João Virginia and probably Tarkowski. The rest didn't do what we need them to do. And they're beginning to look tired. They're beginning to look jaded. And when you're tired and jaded and playing at the level that we're allegedly playing at, that's when you're going to suffer injuries. And we haven't got the depth in the squad to cover those injuries. Ergo, we get beaten easily. And if you brutally examine yesterday's performance, we were beaten rather easily. And it makes you wonder, where on earth are we going? We've got an owner who doesn't want to know. We've got an owner who doesn't talk to us. We've got a board that's practically non-existent, because we might have three directors and a board, but nobody's ever heard from the guy that Moshiri brought in. And the other one's Colin Chong. And with the greatest respect to him, he's a project manager for the new stadium. He's not a CEO. So there's absolutely no direction. There's no plan. There's no strategy. Probably the only strategist within the club at the moment is Kevin Thelwell. And he must be like a swan, trying to look calm on the surface and pedaling like crazy underneath, because he hasn't got a clue where we're going from one day to the next with regards to strength, potentially being able to strengthen the squad. He's probably looking solely at damage limitation for the next 3 or 4 days, as somebody will almost certainly come in with a bid for someone on the squad, whether it's a player we wouldn't mind losing to get him off the wage bill, or whether it's one of our better players who we would be aghast at having to sell, a Pickford, a Branthwaite, and maybe even an Onana. And it's utter chaos. The club is utter chaos. And I'm sorry, I'm going on about this, but I was thinking about this long and hard this morning. We said at the start of this season that the last two seasons, when we've gone to the last day of the season and the next to the last day of the season to survive, that the fans, by and large, had played such a major role in keeping the club in the Premier League the last two seasons, that they were drained. The fans were drained. And I think the club has gone to the well of fans once too often. the fans are getting tired. They'll still sell their allocation at, or fulfill their allocation at Fulham on Tuesday night. We'll still fulfill our away allocation at every other game for the rest of this season. And the fans will keep tipping up at Goodison for full houses, week in, week out. We do that. But the energy and is being drained out of the fans. It, I truly believe this. It's got to the stage now where people go to the game, but how many of the Blues that were at Goodison yesterday truly, hand on heart, felt that we'll be in the fifth round draw come the end of this tie. We'll beat these. We'll murder these. This is only Luton. And hand on heart, I don't think there was that many. You could t I think you could tell from the atmosphere in the stadium that a lot of Blues were resigned to the fact that it was going to be a struggle for 90 minutes. And God forbid we'd have drawn and got another game. The last thing this club needs at the minute is another game in the cup midweek. We didn't get it. We got beat. We lost in 6 minutes of added on time because we couldn't defend a corner. And I just there's no plan. And I don't know. It's soul destroying. It really is. I just you know that football should doesn't matter what the sport is and what your team is, whether it's cricket, football, darts, snooker, hockey, ice hockey, horse racing, whatever. When you get involved in your sport as a fan, it's your release from the troubles of the week. It's the one day of the week when you can forget all about work and mortgages and cost of living and energy prices and blah, 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 an idiot government. You go and support your team and you bare your heart for your club. And I think it's getting to the stage now where almost some of the fans, and I'll include myself in this, are going through the motions of supporting the club because I didn't feel confident about yesterday before kickoff. I was kind of interested that he was going to put two up front, but it didn't work. It didn't. It really didn't work. We were lumping the ball up and hoping for a knockdown and a layoff, whereas Luton went to play through us, and did constantly. And it just, where was the plan? There's no short-term plan, or precious little of a short-term plan, because you know Dyche was probably hoping that Doucouré would make some miracle recovery and be available, so he could play his number 10 in the number 10 role. And when he wasn't, we didn't have a number 10, so we had to go two up front. And it didn't work. It was a last-ditch plan, and it didn't work. And we're out of the cup and struggling in the league again. And look at the games we've got coming up. Spurs next week. That's going to be a barrel of laughs, isn't it? Fulham on Tuesday. Okay. That might not be quite as hard a task, but it's away. It's on the road. It's Tuesday night. Very little recovery time. And then we've got, you know, we've got great trips to, you know, the Etihad and Anfield coming up. You know, Chelsea away before the end of the season. Arsenal away before the end of the season. There's no easy games now. And we've got a spectre hanging over as a potential another points deduction. And nobody within the club is talking to us. Nobody is telling us what the plan is. The owner's pissed off. The potential new owners strike me as not genuinely having two aprons to rub together. And the whole club is in utter chaos. And the only thing that's holding Everton Football Club together is the fan base. And I genuinely feel that they've drawn on the well of the fan base once too often.
Well played, Andy.
George, thanks, Andy. God, I'm not sure what to say about that, Jack, but you, because every single word is absolutely spot on, 100%
Yeah,
correct.
I'm certainly not going to sit here and go, well, that wasn't right. That was it's all it all sounds all too hideously recognizable. We looked like Watford yesterday. It was ghastly. And I, you know, The first thing I read this morning when I woke up was that Ben Godfrey will be sold. This seems like idiocy to me because obviously, I mean, I read that Real Madrid are monitoring via Carlo Ancelotti, are monitoring Branthwaite. So Godfrey has to stay because we're surely not going to build. I'm almost stopping myself talking about this because Andy's right. The picture is so much bigger than the detail of what we would like to be talking about, which is how you manage the team, because the team is only a representation now of the utter chaos that it represents, which is above the line at Goodison and below the waterline, really. I think Andy's absolutely right about how I felt about yesterday, and especially after the first 5 minutes, you go, all right, they've got a plan. They know how they want to play. We're going to belt it forward and hope DCL and Beto get lucky. And it's all about luck at the moment. It's just awful. And the only sort of not it's nothing. This is nothing. I was just thinking we had an excellent December. I think we won four games in a row, or and then and this is not, this is not to blame an individual. We don't finish a penalty shootout against Fulham, and since then all the wheels fell off. That would suggest to me that prior to that Fulham match and during that Fulham match and during that penalty shootout, that squad of players believed that something was on, something remarkable was on, and then it was proved that it wasn't. It was a, it was a poor penalty. That's not the point. We lost and we've done nothing since. That shows you probably how fragile whatever confidence there was in the squad is. And the loss of Doucouré is enormous. And, it's all clutching. Andy's absolutely right. It's all clutching at straws. I don't know where you go from here. I really don't. To talk about the match, neither here nor there. I was kind of touched by the last 15 minutes when we dominated the last 15 minutes just on effort. And you thought, well, go on then. You deserve this for the last 20 minutes, because most of the time you've watched them, as Andy said, play through you. But and then they go and pinch it in the last second because. But it was only correct. Any Evertonian who watched that match and goes, no, we deserve to win it, is not terribly well. We didn't deserve to win it. They did, and they did. And as Andy's quite rightly pointed out, and as it was inescapable all week, the contrast between ourselves and the club across the park could not have been more stark this week. And so the only question is, how and when does the recovery begin? Because it doesn't feel to me like we're in any kind of recovery at the moment. You fell off your chair.
No,
That boring.
Not at all. I suppose it shouldn't really come as a surprise, really, what happened yesterday.
I don't think it
Sort
did,
of,
Paul.
no, both in the, I think in the context of currently, all the ills that surround the club. But actually, if you look at it going back, there's always this notion that Everton got, a bit of a cup history. Coming to Goodison, Goodison is our fortress. One of the key things about the building of Bramley Moor, if you cast your mind back to sort of like the innocent days of 2017, when we were talking about Bramley Moor, was taking the fortress that is Goodison to Bramley Moor. It was a key part of the story. But actually, I looked at it just because I had nothing else to do last night, and we've lost 11 cup games, FA Cup games, at Goodison Park since the year 2000.
Right.
Now, bear in mind that we got to two semi-finals and we got to one final in that period as well, but. We've lost at home to Aston Villa, Tranmere, Manchester United, Blackburn, Oldham, Birmingham, Reading, Wigan, Leicester, Manchester City, and now Luton. So it's hardly a surprise, is it? And out of those, what is it? So since 2000, 24, 25 seasons, only in 13 of those seasons is our season actually extended beyond January. If you sort of take the view that the season's only alive when you've got the opportunity to perhaps win a trophy.
The only positive from yesterday is that clearly we weren't going to win that cup. And as a Blue mate wrote to me from Glasgow, he said, anything rather than be dumped in it in the middle of Klopp's victory parade, dumped out of it by, you know, having to meet Liverpool somewhere along the way. But the only positive to take, sorry to interrupt, Paul, but the only positive to take from yesterday is that we now have only the league, and the league is the only thing that was ever important this season.
Mm.
And as Andy said, you know, there was a point where you just thought, oh no, please, not a replay, not a replay. That's where we're at. It's shameful. I interrupted. Sorry, carry on.
No, it's okay. I mean, to be honest with you, and you know, we'll probably talk about some of the reasons why in a couple of minutes. I've sort of written off this season anyway in terms of the league. I fully expect us to be relegated, not because of the number of points that we earn, but because of the number of points that are deducted for one reason or another, be it the first charge, the second charge, and the prospects of administration.
Can I ask a daft question before you carry on, Paul?
Yeah.
We've appealed the first 10-point deduction, and we're currently being assessed for a second misdemeanor, which could result in potentially another 10-point deduction. Is there any chance that we'll get the first deduction overturned, and then they'll just hit us with the second one, so we stay as we are now?
Well, possibly, yeah, because they have to be, you know, from a legal perspective, they have to be treated as two separate charges.
Yeah. So we could get the 10 points back and everyone would be happy. And then the following day they say, oh, no, you're guilty of the second charge. We're taking them back again.
Well, yeah, except if it was the case that we were able to turn around the first charge that we've already been found guilty of.
Yeah.
It makes it almost impossible for the Premier League to make the second charge stick.
Right.
Because for whatever reasons we use to get the first charge negated, would surely apply to the second charge as well.
Right. So potentially then, our survival in the Premier League this season, ignoring the potential threat of administration because of the ownership situation, our longevity in the Premier League is now almost dependent upon the appeal for the first points deduction being upheld and us getting 10 points back.
Yes, but I think the way we've got to look at it, and if you were managing the football team, or if indeed you were managing the business at Everton, you'd just have to say to the players and to the manager, and to a degree we thought we'd done this successfully, although recent results perhaps suggest that we haven't done it quite as well as we thought we might. Your job is just to get as many points as you possibly can on the pitch.
Yeah.
And wherever that leaves us at the end of the season is obviously going to be determined by factors outside of your control. So you, the playing squad, you, the football management team,
yeah,
I've got to forget about that.
Yeah.
Just get as many points as possible. If it's 40 points, great. If it's 50 points, better. If it's 55 points, fantastic, because then we've got a chance of staying in the league regardless of what happens in the courtroom. And that has to be the focus, and it has to continue to be the focus of the football team. I just And I agree, George, that it looked in December that, you know, that we'd been galvanized by the first charge, and we went on that run. It looked yesterday as if either people have taken the view that the FA Cup is not that important this season because we need to retain all of our efforts for the Premier League for the reasons just given, or indeed we've just hit a wall and you know, in cycling there's this thing about like you hit the wall and it doesn't matter how hard you press the pedal as your legs just don't turn any faster. Mm-hmm. And is that the case with this football team, given the enormous pressures that everybody is under to achieve because of what's happening in the courtrooms, given the lack of resources that we have, given the lack of direction and leadership and ambition from the top of the club? I'm not talking about Deitch, I'm talking about, you know, from the boardroom.
Yeah.
The lack of pressure on the players from the players underneath, the people who should be competing for places in the first 11. I mean, Beto yesterday, and this is not like sort of blaming it all on Beto. Clearly, it's not, because it's the problems of, you know, he's a minor player in the cast of problems. But this was his big opportunity yesterday, and yet. I'm not saying it wasn't because he didn't make the effort, but for whatever reason he didn't deliver. He and others obviously, but he didn't deliver yesterday. And maybe it's just because that's, you know, he's reached the limit of his abilities, both as a player, but also just given everything that's going on around the club at this moment in time. It does seem to me to be slightly unfair to be critical of the players, given everything that's happening. And I know Deitch has said, you know, I'll keep the players protected from everything that's happening around the club. But to me, watching yesterday and listening to the Goodison crowd, I think we've got to the point where it's got to us. You know, the last two games at Goodison, the crowd have been quiet. And yesterday, now, as I said earlier, our record demonstrates perhaps we're not a great cup team at Goodison. Well, we're not a great cup team, but we don't have a stellar record at Goodison, and we haven't now for a quarter of a century, the last quarter of the century that we will play at Goodison. But all of these factors are just all adding up to say, it seems to me highly unlikely that we're going to be able to produce the performances that are necessary to beat the challenges that are being presented to the club in its entirety. And I'm sorry to say that because it sounds awfully, morose, and it's not what Evertonians will want to hear. But if somebody can demonstrate to me how we get out of this feeling, then they have to do it, because as much as we've praised Deitch on this podcast and other people on other podcasts have done for his approach, and I know George, you in particular, think his qualities as an individual are very high and very strong, I just don't think it's going to be enough.
No, neither do I anymore.
I feel sorry for Deitch to some degree, and my heart goes out to the players who are trying. They're trying the very best. It's just that the best isn't good enough at the minute. That monologue I reeled out before was really aimed way above the pitch. It's aimed at the executive, and particularly the owner and the boardrooms that we've had in recent years that have allowed the club, almost engineered the club, to become, well, you've said it many times, our kids, second rate. Yeah. You know, we've everyone talks about Everton being a big club, and in terms of history and the list of firsts and everything, first floodlights, first with four sides, blah 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 blah. First under soil heating, great. We, trophies, nine championships, five FA Cups, European Cup Winners' Cup. In that respect, we're a big club, but that doesn't count for anything in this day and age. In the now, we're nothing like a big club. The save for the loyalty and of the fan base, we're no longer a big club. The fans are totally exempt from criticism. And if anything that I said before came across as being critical of fans, it wasn't meant to be. You cannot possibly, no one can fault the fan base of Everton Football Club for what they have endured down the years and what we've endured and striven to overcome in the past, well, in now 3 seasons on the trot. 3 seasons on the trot of having to do what they can to lift the players on the pitch to those extra miles to get the job done. And I just, like I said before, I just think that the club has drawn on the well of the fans once too often. And even this fan base, as loyal and passionate as it is, I think is drained. And the blame lies totally at the top. And it's not just in this last year, it's gone back over however many years, and it's
No, not once in anything that you've said, Andy, either today or on previous podcasts, likewise for George, has ever been in any way critical of Everton fans. Everton fans, I think, are beyond criticism for their support of the club, and they will continue to be beyond criticism, regardless of what happens to the club in future, weeks and months ahead, because we are on the cusp of, fundamental change to the club. But this is something that's been coming for a long time, not only just in terms of our FA Cup record, but the idea that we're a big club, we're a club with huge and loyal support. I think that's all you can say these days. We're no longer a big club. When Farhad Moshiri arrived at Everton in 2016, according to the Deloitte Money Football League, and yes, George, I can hear your teeth grinding when I'm judging a club by virtue of how much revenue it generates, because that shouldn't really be the criteria for judging how big a club is. But increasingly, it's relevant to the performance of the club. We were seventh in the Premier League. Top of the rest, the best of the rest, as we were known as, and we were 17th across Europe. Obviously, that reflects the Premier League's dominance of European football in terms of revenue because of the broadcast revenues that we generate. Today, we're 13th in the Premier League in terms of revenue. Clubs like Fulham and Crystal Palace generate more revenue than we do. Newcastle United generates more revenue than we do. And we scraped in to the top 30 in Europe. And that is pretty much all you need to know. Well, obviously there's much more, but if you want a lead indicator as to the direction of travel for the club and over whose watches most of this happened. Well, yes, we can point to the gradual decline that occurred over most of the Ken Wright period through a lack of ambition, through not having the right people on the board, through not pushing when we had opportunities to push under David Moyes, not breaking through, as we used to call it, the glass ceiling. The fact is that our relative competitive position has deteriorated faster under Fuad Mashiri than at any point in our history. And yeah. to go from being the seventh biggest club, just in terms of revenue, we can argue that we're much bigger than that in terms of our history, in terms of number of trophies that we've won over our history, of course, to being just 13th and being now 30th in Europe. You know, we're about to drop off the page. And what does that actually mean? Well, it means, first of all, we don't have enough money to compete with the clubs above us. So it's we have to get more out of the for every pound that we generate, we have to get more out of that pound than any other club above us does in order to be level with that club. Therefore, we need better people running the club, both on and off the pitch. Off the pitch, obviously, we don't have better people than other clubs because we wouldn't be in this position if we did. On the pitch, there's some evidence to suggest that whilst these people are working as hard as they possibly can and Dyche is a fine character, blah, 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 but actually they're not competitive against our peer group in the Premier League. What's up? Sorry, I'm going on a bit of a long point now, Andy. What's our peer group in terms of the Premier League? Well, I used to say, and I've written for years, that our peer group was the Big Six. That's rubbish. It's not the Big Six. It might just about be the middle six or seven, which puts us to 13th. Or actually, based on last couple of years, last 3 years, it could be the bottom seven.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's bottom five,
because we finished fourth from bottom and fifth from bottom.
Yeah, I think though that the Premier League has sort of like created a series of cliff edges within the Premier League itself. People in football talk about the cliff edge between the Premier League and the Championship, and the Championship and the First Division, for example. There's actually a cliff edge between the top six, the ones that always qualify for European football. Okay, I know up to eight clubs can qualify, but the six that always qualify for European football, the middle six or seven that aren't good enough to consistently get in the top six, but aren't bad enough to be consistently in the bottom six or seven.
Mm-hmm.
And then the six or seven who aren't good enough to be in the middle, let alone the top. And they may typically be the clubs that have just come up from the Championship. So they're having to compete with far less money, or have got to that point with far less money than anybody else because they've been in the Championship. Or they may be the three or four clubs who are the worst three or four run clubs in the Premier League, of which we are now. That's probably the one thing which we'd win a cup in at this moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we are, and it's sort of been said by people like me and by both of you and others over the years. But that is the harsh reality of it. Even if you break the Premier League up into three separate sections, top, middle, and bottom, and the bottom has, say, the bottom seven clubs, three of which are the clubs that have been promoted, couple of which may be the so-called yo-yo clubs. The other three or four clubs in that bottom seven were members of that now. And in all likelihood, we're not going to be members of it beyond this year. And that is that wholly and truly reflects how badly run the club has been under Fahad Mashiri.
No question. I'm going to put one tiny silly thing in, which is, this is football. If we beat Fulham on Tuesday night and give Spurs a game, and I watched Spurs the other night, they're not that impressive. And, in terms of what I was saying about how the wheels kind of fell off the season when we didn't beat Fulham in the Carabao Cup, the second thing that knocked the wheels off the season was that disgusting VAR decision against Gomez, which would have given us a point at Spurs and everything would have been back on track. Football is that what's the word I'm looking for? It's that febrile. We can beat Fulham. And if we do beat Fulham, it's a very different attitude because that's the way football is. But it doesn't take away It cannot take away, and it must not take away, and it can only obscure for a happy moment and a nice pint of satisfaction, especially for the people who make the journey and go, the fact of what you've just said, which is that we are one of the seven worst clubs, worst run clubs in the country, without a shadow of a doubt. Everybody knows it. We've all got fans, mates who are fans of other clubs, and they all write to us and go, what the is going on with you lot?
Yeah.
And
how, absolutely right, Judge. How can, if anybody's listening to this that is an wants to advocate for the club and for the people who've run the club, just answer this simple question, please. How can we be only the 30th largest club in Europe when we've been, we're one of five, six ever presents in the Premier League?
Yeah.
And ask
I'm
yourself,
sure.
Where, sorry, George, can you just finish? Ask yourself where the other five ever presents of the Premier League, where they are in terms of rankings in Europe. Sorry, I just wanted to make that point.
You're dead right. I mean, but honestly, like Andy said about his feeling about the fan base, my feeling about the club is that there's nobody who understands the basis of the question that you're talking about. The basis of what you've just said is care. I care about this club. And I would put my hand on my heart and say, apart from the people I can see, because Deitch, I believe, is doing his best, and I never see Thelwell, so, but the rest of them, Moshiri, the board, whatever it was, the board as it was, the, you know, the liars who said that she was being strangled and all that bollocks, they don't care about the club. I don't believe there's anybody there who would understand the basis of what you're saying, which is don't let this happen. This is too important emotionally for some of us. But for some of us, they're not members of Everton Football Club. And I may be doing a huge disservice to the people who run the ticket department who might be listening to this going, you don't know what you're talking about, bollocks. I give my heart and soul to this club because Andy's niece worked there. And I know that my niece, Andy's daughter worked there. And I know that she did. But she got fed up because of incompetence. She called it Toffee Towers. It's, I'm at the end of my rope. I'm not at the end of my rope because it's only my rope. It's, you know, it's just football. But when you're hoping for luck, yesterday I wrote to a mate of mine going, I suspect Barkley will probably undo us today. I hope he doesn't, of course, but we need some luck. Didn't get any luck. Got a really crappy VAR decision. Everybody knows the DCL's the first on the front post to push him out of the way and the ball will come to you. And VAR showed you being pushed out of the way, nothing. Goal. I can't go there with that. It's I've lost the plot. I'm so cross. Sorry, guys. I don't know what I was banging on about now.
Can we just change tack slightly, Gus, yes. going back to the big club, small club question. Correct me if I'm wrong, but earlier this week, Richard Masters, the CEO of the Premier League, referred to clubs like Everton and Forest as small clubs in his presentation, his question and answer session with the people from the Department of Culture, Media and Sport. What right has he got to suggest that any club is small? I mean, he's referred to Everton and Forest. Everton with, as we said before, 9 league titles, 5 FA Cups, European Cup Winners' Cup, Notts Forest were champions, twice European Cup winners with Cluffy, 4 times League Cup winners. Who the hell is Richard Masters to determine that Everton or Forest or anybody else for that matter is a small club or a big club? And to do it publicly, he might think it, and he's entitled to think it, as I'm entitled to think that he's a plaster cast twat. But what gives him the right to say that in the public domain, that any club is small in a league that he is allegedly the CEO of. I was flabbergasted when I read the transcript of that and thought to myself, well, as I've just said, who the hell is he to determine and to say it publicly?
Well, you're absolutely right, Andy, and you know that leads us into the letter that was sent by the Department for Culture, Media, and Sport this week. From his perspective, as the CEO of the Premier League, every single member of the Premier League should have equal standing because they're all equal shareholders of the Premier League. So that's the first point to make.
Right.
I mean, clearly it doesn't work this way, but it should work on the basis that as a member of the Premier League, you have equal weighting in terms of your importance to that league. And it's going to be very interesting to see because the DCMS have asked to provide on what basis did he determine who's, you know, what is a small club, what is not a small club.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, it just smacks of favouritism and bias.
But the answer is money and power. It's not, you know, I mean, he's out of order, but he's not saying anything that every average fan in the country thinks. Everybody knows Brighton's a smaller club than Liverpool.
Yeah, we know. Yeah, but that's not the point. The point is that he is supposed to be, he is the chief executive officer of the Premier League, as Paul's just said, of which there are currently 20 members who all have got an equal share in the Premier League. So he should not be voicing that A, B and C are small clubs and D, E and F are big clubs.
Couldn't agree more, Andy.
Because the bottom line is, we all know that the big clubs are them across the park, City, United, Chelsea, Arsenal and Tottenham. Those are the big clubs in the eyes of the Premier League, in the eyes of the media, in the eyes of the football world. Spurs haven't won anything for donkey's years. So what gives them the right to be a big club? Oh, they're in London. They've got a 60,000-seat stadium. Great, they're a big club. You know, Chelsea are mid-table. You know, and the bottom line is that those big clubs are the clubs that try to wreck the Premier League by wanting to bugger off and form a European Super League, which still hasn't died a death and is likely to rear its ugly head again sometime soon. So he's
bang out of order is what he is, but
that's
the phrase I was looking for.
We're trying not to swear,
but he's not saying anything. He's saying something he shouldn't have said, but you know, we live in a political world where people say all manner of stuff that they shouldn't say. He's not saying anything that's a big surprise.
Yes, but in the context, no, you're right. Absolutely, you're right. But in the context of, you know, how is he saying this? He was justifying the Premier League rule book on the basis that the rule book is for all, not just for small clubs, which is a sort of admission in itself that small clubs are treated differently.
Exactly.
You know, it's a crazy thing. So therefore, you know, the competition is fundamentally biased and unfair, and I think that's a better way of describing it than, although I can understand perfectly why people say therefore it is corrupt, but it actually got me thinking about, you know, what is it that defines a big club, obviously in terms of revenue, turnover and stuff like that, geographic location perhaps, you know, the fact that you're a London club, you generate more money. But actually, one of the key differentiators between, and this goes back to the sort of, you know, breaking the Premier League up into like three different sections, is that regular qualification, and this is what Moshiri recognised, I think, regular qualification for Europe makes you a big club. because the extra revenue that regularly qualifying for Europe generates allows you to buy better players and pay bigger wages, particularly under a system, and even more so under the next system that comes in, where what you can pay players is going to be tied to what you earn, what your turnover is going to be. So actually, if you think the current rules are unfair, the new rules that come in are going to be even unfairer to the smaller clubs, because it guarantees that you can't spend any, at least with the current PSR rules. And I'm not supporting the PSR rules, but there's wriggle room, and as we talked about last time, there's a 3 year period upon which you can move up and down. Under the new rules that come in, you're going to be tied to a percentage, and that percentage is going to go 90, 80, 70 over a 3 year period, but it will stick at 70. So in let's say in 5 years' time, you will only ever be able to spend 70% of your turnover, so on player wages. So if you're Manchester City and your turnover is 3 times bigger than Everton's, nearly 4 times bigger than Everton's, you can spend nearly 4 times more on player wages. So how does that help make the league any more competitive? It doesn't. But
It doesn't.
it got me thinking about European football and the structure of European football, and why is it perhaps that the Premier League always want the same clubs, English clubs, to qualify for European competitions? Why is it actually that they don't want a Leicester to come through the ranks? They don't want a Birmingham City or even an Everton to win the FA Cup. And it comes down to how European tournaments are structured. And European tournaments are not tournaments of equals. They're tournaments of unequals, even more unequal than Premier League clubs, because everything's driven by your coefficient. What's your coefficient? I can hear everybody shouting. Well, your coefficient is based on how many times you've qualified for Europe and how successful you've been in qualifying for Europe. And as a result of your coefficient, the more successful you are, the more frequently you qualify for Europe, the easier actually it is for you to qualify within the competitions themselves. You're granted a more favorable progress through the competition by virtue of previous success. So it doesn't serve anybody's purposes, if you're the Premier League, to have anybody other than the top six ever appearing in European competitions. As a result of which, the difference between those that qualify for Europe and those that don't qualify for Europe just increases year on, and compounds year out. So the whole system is designed and built against anybody. It's not just PSR. The whole system is designed to stop those that are not currently successful being challenged. Sorry, to stop those that are successful being challenged by those that are currently not successful. And that's what we're fighting against. And that's why, even if he didn't mean to say it, he meant it when he started talking about big clubs and small clubs, and why it's actually important to him that there are big clubs, and why it's important that there are small clubs, because by virtue of the small clubs make the competition less competitive for the big clubs. Therefore, the same big clubs qualify for Europe, and because they qualify for Europe every year, they get a more favorable ranking in Europe than somebody that doesn't, which means that they're more likely to win a European competition, which means that their coefficient goes even higher, which means that that the Premier League is better represented at European levels. It's all a game, with a totally unfair game within a game. And I
It's the way you
think,
say that. It's absolutely right.
this is what all that's happening. And unfortunately, Everton are the people that are in the dock. All that's happening here is the game is being exposed for what it is, and it's not a level playing field. I mean, you could argue that it never has been, and you could argue that we were beneficiaries back in the Mersey millionaires under John Moores and so, but it's never ever been as crooked as it is today. And we have the misfortune of having had, not in cash terms, because he's put a lot of cash in, but we've just had the misfortune of having had the worst possible owner at a time when having the worst possible owner creates the most damage. And if
Well, the
you,
irony is that the worst possible owner provided us with the means to do it properly, and we completely and utterly failed, and we've wasted gigantic amounts of what should have been money that made us into a top six club. But it's done the exact opposite. We're a bottom six club, and that's just mismanagement. And no point ranting about the past because it's gone. But the future looks bleak.
Sadly.
And yeah, we've been talking for like about 50 minutes, and we've not even touched 777. We've not even touched the club's current debt position. We've not even touched the basis upon which we're going to appeal. We've barely touched the second charge. This is the magnitude of issues that are currently facing the club. Yet, Jordan, I think I use your words and Andy yours as well. It seems that the people who run our football club just don't care.
You can't see where the care is, can you? You can't
No,
feel it.
it's not plainly visible.
You can't hear it.
No,
And when you do, never
it's a
mind that one.
shell. Even if as somebody who desperately wants to sell the club, if I was Farhad Moshiri, I would be on every football news channel banging the Everton drum. Because he should be doing that as a seller anyway, because he should be making out that the club is far better than it is. But no, he's not. When was the last time he spoke publicly? The last time he spoke publicly, I think, was, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think was when he spoke to Jas Bahr in January.
That was farcical.
So 12 months ago, when everybody claims that they were both in the same room, whether they were or not, I don't know. They
Well, they
didn't.
clearly weren't in the same room. They were both looking in the same direction. What were they doing? Talking into a mirror.
It's called crossing the line in my trade. And it was hilarious to watch as Farhad talked to the wallpaper and then the bloke captured him.
I found it depressing to watch because they took the pair of them took the fan base to be fools.
Yes, I totally agree with that. And I don't believe for a second that the fan base are any such thing or believed a fucking word of it. I think they won't. This guy's patronizing us. This guy's condescending to us. This is our leader. This is the person who we're supposed to hope for. He's talking in platitudes. We can all recognize that stuff. We've watched politics. We've learnt all those languages of fibs and lies and bullshit. And that's all that was. I didn't believe a single word of it. And it's my trade. So, but it's just hopeless. It's hopeless. Horrible. I can't bear it.
He said that the club was facing an existential crisis. And having acknowledged that, one would have thought then he would have a plan to get us out of it.
There hasn't been a plan for donkey's years.
No, he's right. There isn't.
The last time we had a true plan, the last time there was a true plan, and this is only for really for on field, if you like, was when Joe Royle took over. And he realised that the squad of players he had some talent, but it wasn't a great side. So they had to do something with them to make them successful. And we became the dogs of war and went on and won the FA Cup. That's the last time there was a bona fide plan. And then that backfired when they wouldn't back Joe Royle in the transfer market and Joe walked. And the writing was on the wall back then. That's over 20 years ago. Well, it's 20, what is it, nearly 30 years ago. And since then, there hasn't been a plan. Moisey tried his best. He had his own plan, but his plan started off with let's get to 40 points. That wasn't ambitious. That was survival. And yes, he got us into Europe. We got into the qualifiers for the Champions League. But then we were denied that through dubious decisions. But there has not been a plan for donkey's years. And there isn't a plan now.
No,
The
exactly.
club is entirely in survival mode. And in all honesty, I don't believe there's anybody within the club involved in the off-field business. I think Thelwall got a plan for the on-field, and I'm sure as hell that Sean Dyche has got some kind of a plan, even though it didn't work out yesterday. He's got some kind of a plan. But go away from the field and go upstairs. I don't think there's anybody has got a Scooby-Doo of how on earth to rescue this club from the plight it's in. I really don't. And there are good, honest, hard-working people within the club. Of that, there is though no doubt. But in the positions that count, no. I'm sorry. The staff in the box office, do their damnedest. The people who run the catering do their damnedest. The cleaners do their damnedest. The tea ladies do their damnedest. The people who should be formulating strategy and developing plans and driving the club forward. No, I'm sorry. They haven't got a Scooby-Doo.
Let's not forget that Fahad Mashiri's plan was to sell the club to 777. And he
That's a
said,
plan.
he said, the more time I spend with the 777 team, the more my confidence increases that we have found the right people to take the club forward in the modern era. They are highly professional and deliver exactly what they say they will. And I look forward to them achieving their regulatory approvals and proceeding to completion in a timetable that we set.
Right.
That timetable was 10 to 12 weeks. This is what he said on the 15th of September. We're 20 weeks on, and we're nowhere nearer, not that I want it, but we're nowhere near having that approval.
Incredible. In absolutely incredible.
So we're left with a situation whereby the people that Fahad Mashiri thinks are the best people to take the club forward, we have to question, well, we questioned that 20 weeks ago whether that was
Yeah.
the right analysis and the right conclusion. Clearly, nobody in the Premier League believes that is the case because they haven't given the approval. And we are literally living hand to mouth.
And that hand to mouth could, it's the 28th today, and the window closes when? Monday night? 31st?
Well, 31st is Wednesday, isn't it?
Sorry, I beg your pardon. So that hand to mouth could result in sometime between now and when 11 o'clock Wednesday night or whatever time it is on Wednesday evening, the departure of one or more players in order to raise cash to keep feeding the mouth as best it can. And that's, if and I sure as hell hope that it isn't that, Pickford or Branthwaite or Onana, and there's a few others that we desperately don't want to sell. But I genuinely feel that if it were to be, let's say, Pickford or Branthwaite that went in order to bring in enough money to keep the lights on, and pay the wage bill and maybe make another payment to Langholm Rock on Bramley Moor, I think that would be such a kick in the stones for the fan base. Again, I feel so desperately sorry for this fan base who've given everything and continue to give everything and probably will continue to give everything for a club that doesn't have a plan, doesn't seem to care.
Yep.
Nailed that. Hope you're wrong. Don't believe you are.
I hope I'm wrong, our kid. I really do.
Of course,
you know, I mean, between us, what we got watching the Blues, 150 years between us, three of us, and there's people who are older than us who've been going and are still going. This is not the Everton Football Club that I fell in love with back in 1969-70. It's a pale imitation of that football club. And that's the saddest thing. And I've said this to some other Blues who I'm friendly with who are a lot younger than me, who've never seen Everton lift a trophy, never seen an Everton captain walk up the steps at Wembley, never seen a championship trophy unveiled at Goodison. You know, who weren't in Rotterdam on that wonderful night. They've never felt the joy of seeing an Everton captain lift a piece of silverware. And I think that is so incredibly sad that probably two whole generations of Evertonians have never seen a trophy lifted by this football club. And that is the... I'm lost for words now. It's just awful.
I think you said it all, Andy.
Well, stuff Fulham and you'll have to eat your words, Andy.
Oh, I hope so, bro. I do so hope so.
I hope so too. I really do. Can I just finish on my I'm not sure what would I call it.
Soapbox.
Yeah. So yeah, possibly. This is not a deliberate attempt to, you know, sort of call out Moshiri or whatever. It's just facts. Okay. When he came to the club in 2016. So not only have we gone from being the seventh largest Premier League club to being the 13th largest Premier League club, being the 30th largest European club, but and people say, well, look at the stadium, you know, sort of, which may be called Moshiri's folly at some point in the future. When he came to the club, we had slightly less than £50 million of debt, which was considered to be a dangerous situation for the club to be in. Manageable, but not ideal, certainly. And in fact, one of the first things he did was to clear the debt. He provided an £80 million loan and cleared the debt. And people like me wrote wonderful things about what he'd done for the club in doing that. But as it stands today, so where are we? 28th of January, so very nearly end of January, and bear in mind he came in what, mid-February, towards the end of February, so we're nearly 8 years. And as it stands today, there's give or take 10-20 million either way, 500 million outstanding to Moshiri, which, okay, people will argue he's never going to get back, but nevertheless, 500 million outstanding to Fahad Moshiri. And this will shock people. There's 225 million outstanding to Rights and Media Funding. There's 140 million outstanding to MSP. And there's around about 150 million, of which around 14 million was provided in the last sort of 10 days or so to 777. I've said it before, but that's over a billion pound of debt. And £1 billion of debt, and we've sold all of our best players over the last 8 years, with the exception of the few decent players that we've got in the squad currently, to take us to the position that we're in, where we are comfortably the worst run of the bottom section of the Premier League. And that is your legacy, Mr. Mashiri.
Spot on.
Yeah. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out.
Well, he's got to be in the building first.
That's true. Yeah, he's never in the building. Yeah.
It is an absolute disgrace where we are, and it's down. I'm not going to say it's just down to one man, but he ultimately has to be responsible for it. It has to be down to a huge number of people who never saw the warning signs and never acted to protect the interests of this football club, or never cared enough to protect
I
the
think you're
interests of
getting
this
warmer
football
now.
club. If they saw it, they looked after their own interests as against the interests of the club.
That's exact. That now you're talking.
And that's where we're at. And that's.
This football club is an example of what happens when greed gets hold of people.
And that's why the existential crisis that Mashiri himself identified 12 months ago but did nothing about is actually, it's here, it's now.
Tune in next week, folks, for
next week's thrilling installment.
Yeah. And I'm really sorry. I hate doing this because, people are going to listen to this and they're going to go away feeling even worse about the football club than
I
they did
don't
before they
believe that, Paul.
started.
I don't believe that. I honestly think that the people who listen to this, listen to it so they get to the end and go, well, that's a clearer picture of what it feels like to be an Evertonian than anybody else is offering.
Maybe, yeah.
I don't think you should put yourself down and go, I'm a gloom monger. I don't buy it.
No, I'm not.
This is reality. Look at this yesterday, man. It was tragic. Lamping it forward, hoping like mad, no cohesion, no plan. We were, Luton Town looked like a football side, not a very interesting one, not a very good one, but too good for us. Everybody knows that, and everybody knows that what we watched on the pitch yesterday, given honest effort from the players, is exactly mirrored up in the upper echelons of the club. Incompetence. I just want to rant.
Yeah, spot on, George. All right, should we leave it there?
Yeah, I think so.
Till we've struck Fulham and Spurs, yeah. Please,
I'd love to have it all, everything I said, rammed back down our throats.
Yeah, but that's what football is,
Yeah.
In December, we were all going, oh my God, are we going to get any points? And we got loads. And then the wheels fell off. And that's just who that squad of players is. But the one thing you can say about the squad of players is they're behaving honestly to the best of their ability. So you've got to hold your hand up and go, I support that.
Just as a complete aside, just before we finish, my daughter was looking at going to the match on Tuesday, and she didn't want to take a fellow Evertonian ticket, so she was looking for a ticket in what used to be called the neutral part of the Putney End. Do you know how much an adult ticket is to stand
What, to
behind the
go and watch
goal?
Everton Fulham?
Yeah.
No.
Just like a bog standard ticket behind the in the Putney End, so behind the goal.
Isn't it supposed to be 20 quid for the away fan? Oh man, you said she's not going as an away fan,
Yeah,
did you?
it's 30 quid, isn't it, for the for the
Right.
away fans? But if you sit in you just like a turn up and you want to, and you end up sitting with the Fulham fans,
Right.
which
Go on.
a decent bunch, and there's never any trouble or anything else, and lots of Evertonians sit there. It blew me away. 59 quid.
Wow.
Holy smoke. 59 quid.
That's a lot of money for a junior doctor.
A lot of money for a lot of people, that bro, for a midweek game.
On a Tuesday,
Awesome.
on a Tuesday evening for a,
Yeah.
you know, frankly, what's probably not going to be a very interesting game of football.
Wow. Look at that.
Yeah, just sorry, it's complete sort of non sequitur to anything else that we've been talking about. It's just like, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hope she gets a ticket then. Hope she enjoys it.
I think she's on the picket line, so she won't be going.
All right. Fair enough. Power to the people.
Yeah, never mind. All right, guys. Listen, thanks very much. And George, you are right, of course. It is just saying it as it is, and it's taking, you know, taking all the spin away, and just like the harsh reality of the situation is this. And you're right, we shouldn't have to apologise for doing it.
No, I don't think we should. I'm quite certain that we've got such good numbers because we're talking what appears to us to be the truth.
Yeah, and it, you know, as we always say, if it's not the truth, then
tell
somebody
us.
Just has to pick up the phone and tell one of the three of us, and we'll put it right.
Retractions are offered.
Okay, guys, thank you so much. And to everybody else, thank you so much for listening, as always.
Yeah, cheers.
Thanks for your support. And it's always great to get comments from you, either publicly or privately. And it's great to know that what we do is appreciated. So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
For those going on Tuesday, you know, safe journey.
Yeah.
Enjoy the match. Yeah. And above all else, a safe return home.
Yeah, don't pay 59 quid and don't we stuff them.
Indeed. Up the toffees. There you go.
Yeah, come
Thanks,
on,
guys.
Cheers.